Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Nick Headley is a communications consultant focused on the economics, climate change, and equal access opportunity. Nick, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Hi, Howard. Thanks very much for having me. I'm well, thanks to you.
I am well, thank you. So there's been a lot of talk, and it's very interesting because South Africa, look, I think we're going to head up this whole transition to sustainable power simply because it's the only thing we really can do. But at the same time, it's probably not a bad thing. Give us an overview about what's happened at COP27 and what that means for us.
Sure. So I think the most significant thing for us is that South Africa formally presented its just energy transition plan, and that obviously last year at COP, a deal was announced, an $8.5 billion deal with the US, UK, France, Germany, and the EU to basically assist South Africa with its energy transition. So a year later, we've put a plan together that follows about a year and a half, actually, of negotiations with coal communities and other very important stakeholders. We presented our plan. It's a 216-page document that is actually very pragmatic and a sort of good map forward. It's partly sort of based on the National Development Plan, which obviously was, we've kind of forgotten. It was a great plan,
right,
though.
Yeah.
So it basically lays the sort of path forward for gradually moving away from coal, and that's a kind of decades-long process until the 2050s or even 2060s, according to the current planning, while also making a plan for all of those coal-reliant communities to make sure that they are not suddenly left stranded and left behind. So it's a good plan. I highly recommend reading it, and I do think it is something worth getting behind.
Right. So how realistic is it for South Africa to move off a coal dependency?
Good question. It's, I mean, we all know our government's ability to implement many of its great plans is not fantastic.
Right.
So
nicely
you
put.
Can be forgiven. Yeah. So you can be forgiven for being skeptical. But one way or another, the transition is going to happen. The export market for the coal that we mine is gradually shrinking. Coal power is becoming less and less economically viable every year relative to modern alternatives. So whether it's economic or the need to act on a very urgent climate crisis, it is going away. So the point is kind of that this transition can either be unplanned and very chaotic and leave people behind and leave people stranded, or it can be very well thought out and well considered and done in a way that really takes the most vulnerable people to the transition into account and makes a plan for them. So it's something we absolutely have to get right. It's there's no choice really in the matter. So yeah, it's not easy at all. It's going to be tough, and it's going to require government to have the kind of sense of urgency that it doesn't normally have. Yeah, it's tough to see it absolutely going smoothly, but it's critical.
The aspect of power, it's so interesting because I was actually doing some research on this, how refugees in different countries over the last century or so have fled their homes with different things. So when I look at Jews, for example, who had to flee Europe ahead of the Nazi Holocaust, they would sew gold or whatever they had of value into their coats and things like that, because that was currency. And then I saw in I think it was Myanmar or one of the areas, refugees in more recently fleeing, they had these mini solar panels, because a solar panel meant that you could charge your phone for communication. You could perhaps heat a bottle for a child. And it was very interesting for me. It might have been that I was reading too much into it, but it was fascinating to see how this transition, how it meant that power, electricity, energy actually is currency that is so vital in our lives, so much so that it becomes something that you absolutely have to have.
I think that's a really great observation, actually. And I think a lot of the transition, which I think most people don't quite grasp, is that it is about sort of decentralizing energy and sort of allowing people to take power back. And rather than having one very centralized monopoly that's generating all of our electricity, everyone should have the opportunity to own the electricity system, contribute to the national grid stability, and also generate an income off of that. So something that, I mean, in the same region as Myanmar, in Vietnam, in 2020, they were facing a very big power crunch. They realized they were going to basically demand would outstrip supply in about a year or two. So the government launched this very smart program where they incentivized households to install rooftop solar, as well as batteries, with very good sort of rebates and incentives for feeding electricity back into the grid. And in just a matter of months, Vietnam installed 9 gigawatts of rooftop solar.
Incredible.
And completely avoided a power crunch. So, I mean, that's Kusile and Medupi combined. It's a massive amount of power added in just a couple of months. And it means a huge amount of households are empowered financially. They get an income by being little mini ESCOMs, I guess.
But aren't we seeing that here, though? You know, anecdotally, when so many people that I'm speaking to are in the process of installing solar into their homes. One of the suppliers that I spoke to said they literally are doing hundreds of homes across the country each month. So that's going to quite quickly, I would imagine, reach a point, especially if we're able to supply power back into the grid, that it could really assist, because effectively, as you say, all these homes are becoming mini power stations.
Absolutely. It definitely will start to take pressure off the grid. I think there is a consideration needs to be given that this is not just something that's accessible to sort of middle and upper income households.
Of course.
So there are ways to sort of incentivize installations at lower income households. There are a couple of sort of pilot projects like that on the go in places like the Western Cape. The interesting things happening, but a lot of it hinges on ESCOM offering decent enough feed-in tariffs, where basically rates for contributing to the grid. So that's a prerequisite to making this successful and equitable.
Absolutely fascinating, and definitely a conversation that needs to be given more time. Unfortunately, this morning, that's what we don't have. So Nick Headley, thank you for that. Communications consultants focused on the economics, climate change, and equal access opportunities.